WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. California's governor believes a weekend fire that has closed a major freeway was not an accident. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
California Governor Gavin Newsom is blaming arson for a fire that has shut down the busy Interstate 10 in Los Angeles. He points to a preliminary investigation.
There was malice intent that this fire occurred within the fence line, and that it was done and set intentionally.
The fire left 100 columns damaged, he says, with guardrails twisted and blackened. The freeway is used by 300,000 vehicles daily, and there's no word on when it might reopen. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Israeli attacks on Gaza have killed over 11,000 people, according to the Gaza government media office. The Palestinian health minister says Israeli forces have not been evacuating people from other hospitals as its military claims, but rather forcibly evicting them, saying the wounded will likely die on the street. CBS's Deborah Pata reports from East Jerusalem.
Israel says Hamas is running its operations from tunnels deep below, using patients as human shields, and released footage from inside a children's hospital claiming hostages abducted on October 7th were likely held there.
Israel's military says it has initiated a humanitarian effort to transfer incubators from an Israeli hospital to Gaza's Shifa Hospital. The Supreme Court puts in place its first formal code of ethics for the nine justices. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
There's been a lot of controversy about the Supreme Court because it was the only court in the nation that didn't have ethical rules. And there'd been a lot of controversy recently regarding justices receiving gifts and other things that have happened in the court.
With the government funding set to run out on Friday, House lawmakers are faced with an unconventional two-step plan from Republican Speaker Mike Johnson. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
First of all, it keeps spending where it is now for the next few months. No cuts to prized programs that helps the possibility, the prospect of getting some Democrats to vote for it. It also has this quirk to it where it funds one-third of the government through January and the other two-thirds, including the Pentagon, through February.
President Biden will leave for San Francisco tomorrow to attend a summit of Asian leaders. On Wednesday, he'll meet with China's President Xi. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on the agenda.
We anticipate that the leaders will discuss some of the most fundamental elements of the U.S.-PRC bilateral relationship, including the continued importance of strengthening open lines of communication and managing competition responsibly so that it does not veer into conflict.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Gillette.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 96 people in Wisconsin died from domestic violence last year. That's the highest number in 22 years. Those numbers are from the group End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Some social workers tell the State Journal they're worried the situation will get worse with looming cuts to federal victim resource funding. There might be trouble ahead for efforts to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee. The state Senate votes Tuesday on an amended bill to pay for maintenance at American Family Field. But as of Monday night, not enough senators support it to pass. Democratic Minority Leader Melissa Agard.
We believe that we can improve upon the bill, and we're going to continue doing everything that we can to make sure that the state of Wisconsin is getting the best deal possible.
That's Agard on Upfront on WISN-TV in Milwaukee. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Basketball tonight in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Milwaukee Bucks and Chicago Bulls at 5-serve form. The Bucks are 5-4, the Bulls 4-6. Milwaukee coming off back-to-back losses on the road to the Pacers and the Magic over the weekend. Marquette's basketball team goes up a notch, now ranked 4th in the nation. They'll be on the road tomorrow night to take on number 23-ranked Illinois. College football head coach Luke Fickell upset with what he describes as a complete breakdown of the Badgers football team after losing to Northwestern at Camp Randall 24-10. The Wildcats continue their search for a new head coach, and one of the candidates they have in mind is former Badgers coach Paul Christ. Baseball, at a press conference in Chicago, Craig Counsell introduced as the new manager of the Cubs. Council says he didn't realize how upset Brewers fans would be.
I underestimated that reaction for sure. Miscalculation on my part for sure.
That's Cubs manager Craig Council. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear and mild for this time of year, a low in the mid-30s. A mix of sun and clouds and breezy tomorrow. Gusts at times will peak out above 30 miles an hour, maybe even as high as 40. High-low 60s. More sunshine and near 60 on Wednesday. Right now it's 33.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We'll be returning live and in studio on January 3rd.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Coming to you from Allentown, Pennsylvania, our first stop on the Working Class Heroes Tour, and joined with me at the hip for the next 30 days, or at least joined in the RV for the next 30 days, the producer, the professor, the good man, my friend Brett Pransky. Brett, here we are. Here we are.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a great day. We just got finished having a nice breakfast over at the City View Diner. We're all set up over the Teamster 773 hall, and just can't wait to get started.
You know, the first thing I ever heard of Allentown was the 40 years ago, the Billy Joel song, basically the anthem of working class angst, the deindustrialization song. And the sad thing is, and this is where I think most people don't know, song was never really meant to be about Allentown.
Really? Where was it meant to be about?
It was meant to be about Levittown, which, outside, I guess, Staten Island, where Billy Joel actually lived. But, living here in Levittown didn't quite sound the same. So Allentown became the poster child for deindustrialization and the loss of that American dream. Unfairly, I may say, but like many, many towns like it. They suffered through the same kind of struggles that many, like my hometown of Cleveland, did.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of communities like this all over America that have very similar stories. They had, a strong industrial base for generations, and then slowly but surely it was chipped away at and sold to China, and the jobs went away, and in their place, sometimes the jobs came back, but they weren't jobs that were nearly as good. So the neighborhood suffered, the people suffered, and we've heard a lot about it over the years, but that's not necessarily what this tour is about. We're going to tell those stories because they're real, they're meaningful, and we need to talk about them. But this tour is about what we're doing now and what we can do if we keep things on the right track. There's a lot of communities, and you're going to hear from a lot of these folks around the country. They'll tell you the stories about the pain and the anguish and all these things from them, but they'll also tell you the stories of what's happening now and what can happen if we keep things going. There's a lot of hope and a lot of progress going on out there, and we just need to keep it going.
Yeah, I got to tell you, our first stop here in Allentown, special place in my heart. I spent just about 10 years, over 10 years, living in the Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton area. I saw some of the struggle. I remember the old Hess building that was such pride. I remember the downtown area struggling. And now to see it revitalized, now to see it roaring back, gives me great pride and great, I'm thrilled for the area because the people here were fabulous. This is just such a great place.
Yeah, it really is, and the people here have been fantastic. It's been a wonderful day so far, and I'm sure we're just going to see more of the same as the day goes on.
Now, for me, we're going to sit down and talk with a couple of some politicians, some local labor leaders, some folks who are going to share their stories, their pride, their passions, also the struggles, and then later on going to. I can't come to Allentown without hot dogs from Yakko's. Anyone who knows the area knows that that's what you have to do here. And I think this is going to be a theme. I got to be honest, I think it's going to be a theme throughout the tour. We're going to have to find those local places. You know, like your former hometown of Toledo, got to go to Tony Paco's.
Got to go to Paco's. Well, again, we're not going to take a tour like this and go all over America and visit a different Olive Garden in every place. I mean, we want to talk to the locals, and the locals are always going to send you to some place that's been mom and pop owned for the last 75 years where they make the best of whatever it is that they make. You know, it's going to be a great part of the trip.
I'm looking forward to it. But again, our first stop, getting the jitters out, getting the bugs out, going to be a great day. Looking forward to talking to Nick Miller, who's running for state representative here. Young guy, and this is the future of this area. People who, yeah, they're attached to the past. They've heard the stories, but they want to pick up the mantle and move forward. So I'm excited about that as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to Nick. I will make one quick correction. He's running for state senate. But he's a school board guy currently, and he's in a really competitive race. I think he's going to win. And he's an interesting guy. I think people are going to love him.
And we will hear from him when we come back after this break from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Also, make sure you follow us on the website, thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break back here from Allentown. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Today's program was recorded during our Working Class Heroes radio tour this past October. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that President Harry S. Truman issued Executive Order 9639. It ordered the U.S. Navy to seize control of more than four dozen oil refineries across the country. As World War II was drawing to a close, workers in many industries were growing increasingly restless. They had seen company owners rake in record profits, and the workers felt they had not received their fair share. This included oil refinery workers. In August, the workers rejected a proposed settlement of their grievances over wages and hours. On September 17th, the CIO Oil Workers Union called for a strike of its 35,000 members. Although the war was ending, Truman knew oil was needed to demobilize and redeploy the troops. He used that as a basis to thwart the workers and the strike. His executive order declared that the war effort will be unduly impeded or delayed by such interruptions. He went on to state, "The Secretary of the Navy is hereby authorized and directed to take possession of the plants and facilities used in the transportation, refining, and processing of petroleum and petroleum products." Telegrams were sent to the refineries declaring that they were now under the control of the U.S. government. A third of the oil refineries in the nation came under this order. This included refineries owned by the giants of the industry, including Gulf, Shell, and Standard Oil. This was not the last time Truman attempted this tactic. He tried similar methods to intervene in labor disputes on the railroads and in the steel mills. Truman was certainly not alone. For more than a century, U.S. presidents have intervened to end strikes. From Grover Cleveland's calling out the army to end the Pullman strike in 1884 to Reagan locking out the Patco workers in 1981. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com, here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, at the Teamsters Hall, Local 773. Our good friend Dennis Hauer welcomed us into the hall, and we're grateful to have the opportunity to sit down with some folks here in Allentown as we kick off our Working Class Heroes tour. And I'm sitting here with Nick Miller. He's a candidate for Pennsylvania State Senate in the 14th District here in the Allentown area. Because what we're doing is we want to talk to as many people as we can, people who, well, remember the good times, the bad, and, well, the people who have the vision for the future. And I think Nick is going to have an interesting vision on where we go. Nick, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you again to the listeners. It's an incredible opportunity to voters to see the options that they have this coming this November.
And this is really an important election cycle, because I don't think that the differences have been this stark and this far apart at any point in my lifetime. But we're at a really kind of a crossroads moment.
Yeah, we sure are. And this district specifically, it's a toss-up. I mean, it just leans slightly Democrat, but a very moderate district. And, the Lehigh Valley is a very moderate area. And so You know, it swings one way or the other some certain years, but in this crucial election, we'll see how it does.
Now, I'm looking at what's coming out of Washington right now, and I think Joe Biden's doing a great job moving policy on infrastructure, on reshoring manufacturing, talking about strengthening unions. I think we're on a pathway to help us rebuild that middle class, that prosperous working class that I think a lot of people in 2016 and 2020 have been pining for. I think we're on the right path in this moment. I'm curious what you think.
I agree. I mean, the Lehigh Valley has been known to be a manufacturing hub for decades, and you know, we lost that for a little bit, but we're back now, and there's a recent article in the Morning Call that our local newspaper is saying that the average wage for manufacturing is about $75,000, and there's 35,000 people working in manufacturing in the Lehigh Valley, and that's even better than it was back in, you know, the Bethlehem Steel days, and so there's a lot of good manufacturing jobs, you know, coming into the Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, and that has everything to do with, again, policy and investment. So smart government, smart policy, and sound investment. And I understand the union density is coming back around. So this is an opportunity to rebuild that iconic period. Tell me, you know, I always ask people, you know, why they get involved in politics. Why would you want to put yourself in this fishbowl? What's your story?
Well, so I born and raised here. Family's been here for five generations, and you know, long history of family public servants, and want to give back and want to be involved. Ran for the school board in 2019 and have a finance and business background. Wanted to see a struggling school district succeed and bring my background to help that happen. But the reality is it comes on the state level to fix our education system. And so that's why I'm running. You know, as soon as I saw that reality and this new seat was created, there was an opportunity to represent the Lehigh Valley, to be a moderate voice out in Harrisburg, to represent this area and be an effective leader talking about issues that are actually affecting the community.
And hopefully the idea of moving lives forward. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Nick Miller. He's a candidate for Pennsylvania State Senate in the 14th District. Check out the website, nickmillerforpa.com. Now, I see on your website one of the issues that is near and dear to your heart is the LGBT community. I understand you're running against a pseudo-black guy, maybe a white guy. What is that?
There was a social media incident where my opponent acted as a gay black man, or at least pretended to be one, on his burner account. And it's pretty obvious as a 27-year-old, I, you know, grew up on social media. It's pretty obvious when someone makes a fake social media account. But, you know, we continue to focus on the issues and kind of steer clear of that, you know, the personality stuff and talking about, you know, creating jobs, economic development in the Lehigh Valley and investing in education.
It's good you take the high road. I can't get past the dishonesty. That for me, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about, you know, the kind of issues that he would be against. It seems using that as an attack tool. It just seems like an interesting thing.
Some say it's disqualifying, but you know that's for the voters to decide at the ballot box in November.
There you go. Now I'm a labor guy, and one of the things I always have to ask people, because we're in a moment where one election. Especially on the governor's side of things, we could become a no rights at work state. I'm curious your position on organized labor and people joining and forming unions.
Yeah, I mean, we got to get Josh Shapiro elected. I mean, that's crucial to protect our union, our right to unionize, and making sure that our laborers are protected, and also keeping our workplace safe as well for our union members. It's very important that right now we're taking care of those that are working the hardest to get stuff done.
So, you know, if there's an issue that, you know, say, you know, Nick Miller goes, this is my issue. What's that one issue?
Education funding.
Yeah. Why is that?
Just we're underfunding, you know, our communities. You have strong schools, you have strong communities. And if you're not fairly funding, and, you know, an example being we have a middle school from the 1870s, and you got middle school students learning in a classroom where there's no air conditioning, lead paint peeling off the walls, and buildings filled with asbestos, that's not a learning environment that's conducive to setting up our future for success, whether it's our going into the labors or college or careers. It's we have to invest in our education system now to make sure that we're setting up the future for success.
Yeah, because I was reading, as you had said a moment ago, that the Lehigh Valley is coming back in a big way. Manufacturing is coming back. The medical field, huge in this area.
Yes.
Education seems to be a no-brainer. I mean, it seems like this should be the basis of everything that's done. And by not adequately funding, kind of makes me question some priorities or Or is it like it is in some places where it's adequately funded? In some places, like where I lived for a while, the desirable Parkland School District always had what they needed, but maybe not over here. Is this a division problem, or is this a whole education problem?
I'll start with that. Every student deserves a quality education. That's in the Pennsylvania Constitution. And there was a bipartisan formula passed that identifies the needs of different districts, so how much funding they get. So both sides of the aisle agreed that, you know, this was the formula that we're going to use to address the funding. However, they didn't fully fund it. So if the Allentown School District was short, you know, $100+ million a year, you know, that's a huge gap. They didn't address it right away, and they still haven't addressed it. I think it's about $60 million or short every year that these students we've identified need the funding to address the needs of that district, whether it's, you know, property values don't make up the right tax base or different challenges throughout the district. We got to invest in that now, and that change comes on the state level.
So, but, you know, the property tax thing is a really divisive issue in the whole state, and I'm sure here locally as well. How do you get around that? I mean, we're in a moment now where there are people who are saying we should do away with property taxes entirely. I don't know what you replace it with, but I'm curious what your thoughts on how we fund this in a way that's more equitable.
Well, the education funding coming from the state, you know, right now our local tax or property owners are bearing the burden of these annual tax increases by school districts. If they were fairly funded, that we would relieve that burden. And secondly, you know, property tax rebates seem to be more of a fiscally sound approach to helping some of those on fixed incomes, our veterans, our senior citizens that, you know, are continuing to see rising property taxes.
Yeah, now, again, I talk about the division, and we are a very polarized country right now. I guess depending on which hat you bought, the red or the blue, we're on complete opposite ends of things. How do you bridge that divide? I mean, I'm old enough to remember where there were times where both parties would work together and things got done. Sadly, it's becoming increasingly that nothing gets done unless it's one party dominating the other. I'm curious where your thoughts are there.
We have to work across the aisle. I mean, you know, there's, you know, these fringes that are very loud, but nothing gets done on the fringes. It's always in the middle and some compromise and working, making sure you have the right people at the table to make things happen. You know, for instance, whether it's addressing our energy crisis that we have, you know, reducing our foreign oil reliance or foreign energy reliance, you have to have the energy sector at the table. You have to have the environmentalists, and you got to have our workers at the table. We can't leave workers behind in that conversation. So, you know, making sure you're addressing things like making sure we have affordable energy and also protecting the environment is crucial, but it's bringing everybody at the table to make sure that we can have a compromise on the deal.
What do you say to the people that say that, well, we just can't do that. We can't compromise. We have to go all green, or we have to go all. I got somebody who said we should do away with all the solar panels. Got to go back to coal because that's the best way. What's the argument there?
Well, I mean, the argument is that that's not realistic. I mean, if you go all green, you're gonna lose tens of thousands of jobs, and we know that we can't continue using coal. It's dirty energy. We have to move to some of these more cleaner sources. And make sure that we're protecting our environment on the flip side. So it can't be one of the extremes. It's got to be in the middle.
And how does that benefit the Lehigh Valley? I mean, I'm thinking back to the history that I've been reading and when I lived here, some of the history that this used to be an iron area that we used to use a lot of coal. They don't do that so much anymore. Bethlehem was Bethlehem Steel. Used to use a lot of that there. What's the driver here now?
I mean, we've seen this shift to natural gas. You know, natural gas burns hot. I mean, it's great for manufacturing, but you know, back in the day, I mean, it was definitely a very dirty methods of a fracking and extracting it from the earth. But they've cleaned that up, and we have to continue to make sure we're holding those companies accountable in terms of them extracting it. But, you know, moving away from coal is, you know, we know that's a dirty. Science has proven that that's a dirty energy source, and moving to renewable energy sources. And I think if I'm elected, one thing that I look forward to working with Josh Shapiro on is his plan to moving the state required right now is only 8% of our renewable energy comes from renewable sources. And he wants to get that around 25-30%. I think that's a reasonable gradual plan to kind of continue to shift towards that over a reasonable amount of time.
And why is that important?
I mean, because it's renewable, it protects the environment, and also continues to meet our energy demand across the Lehigh Valley and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
I'll tell you, it'd make me happy. We put solar panels on our house back in 2011, 12, when the last solar sunshine fund was out. And back then the SREC credits were like $225. They've fallen down to like six because we haven't moved that number at all from like 5 or 8%, like you said.
Yeah.
We haven't moved it up at all, which we should have been doing incrementally over the years to get us to a point to where we can move away slowly and gradually and make the changes we need without it being painful. Because I fear we're coming to a point where we're not going to have a choice. You look at all the storms and the horrible weather conditions. There are going to be huge problems coming forward.
Yeah, I agree. And we just had a study released about the Lehigh River right here in our backyard. It was one of the most toxic rivers in the country. With some of these forever chemicals, and that's we've got such a beautiful environment here in Pennsylvania that we have to protect that. We have to do a better job as a state and are working with our community leaders, making sure that it gets cleaned up and taken care of.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Nick Miller, candidate for Pennsylvania State Senate. Nick Miller for PA.com, the website. Now, there was just a shooting here recently, and got to bring this up because, this is one of those things. It's the topic of the day. How do we deal with these shootings? Is there a way forward? Or is this just something that happens?
No, it's not something that we can just, not address and say that it's just something that just happens. I mean, we have to take reasonable measures to, work with our community leaders, listen to our community leaders, how we can be more involved in the community. Also on the emergency services side, making sure we have the financial resources for our EMSs, our police, and our firefighters to keep our community safe. And then also, protecting our communities and our families with reasonable gun laws, whether it's universal background checks or, firearm safety. These are reasonable measures we can take to get guns off our streets and to make sure that, our families are safe.
So you're a gun grabber? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not a
so
gun
I'm here,
grabber.
I'm
no,
here
I have
gun
my
grabber.
License to carry, so no, I'm not. But I think that there's reasonable measures that we can take to make sure that our communities are safe.
Yeah, I mean, at least I hope. I mean, at some point, all of this, all of these shootings, all of this carnage at some point has to stop. And there's part of me that goes, a big part of it comes back down to economics, giving people hope and opportunity, giving people a pathway way forward, creating jobs of the future that are going to give people that shot that I think a lot of people, I think that they think doesn't exist. I mean, that idea that you're going to do better than your parents' generation, that American dream of the past, I fear people don't think is possible anymore.
Yeah, and another point there is, I believe you'll be a guest on the show as well, but Representative Mike Schlossberg just went out to Harrisburg and got a $100 million invested in the mental health services, which I think is crucial now in getting ahead of some of the aftermath of the pandemic and the lockdown, is that we saw a ton of students see a couple years of losing out on social emotional learning, and making sure that they have the mental health supports there, I think also is part of that. But I mean, that's why I drive back to education, is you can educate people and set them up for life, and give them a strong foundation. You can really reduce some of the things that could happen down the line.
So last question I've got for you, for people who know nothing about Allentown, who this is the first time they're hearing about Allentown, what should they know?
Allentown's a beautiful place. I mean, it's got beautiful parks, a lot of growing jobs, and local to Philadelphia and New York is very close as well. A lot of great restaurants. A very diverse community. I think of the 14th district. It goes from downtown Allentown to through Whitehall here and up into rural Northampton. It's the Lehigh Valley is a beautiful place. It's growing. Manufacturing's growing. Our airport's growing. And a lot of good stuff. A lot of arts and culture stuff as well.
Yeah, I read somewhere that it's the fastest growing city in the state.
Yeah, and our manufacturing's I think growing 10 times faster than the national average. So when we talk about creating jobs and economic growth, one of the most important roles of a senator is to go back to go to Harrisburg, fight for state dollars, and continue to drive economic development and create jobs.
So that path, things were really good at one point. Back you go back to the industrial age, things got kind of bad here for a while, a little dicey. Now you're doing well, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you walk in downtown Allentown, it's a whole new era. And, we've got the PP&L Center and new restaurants. And there's a ton of different awesome venues downtown. And also, we got Bethlehem right across the river and Whitehall here. And a lot of good stuff happening in the Lehigh Valley.
All good stuff. Nick, I appreciate the time. I wish you the best of luck come November. Good stuff. The website, Nick Miller for PA.com. We'll get links out on social media. How you can take a look at that. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Going to take a quick break back here from Allentown. Make sure you check out the website, therickmithshow.com. Follow us along where we've been, where we're going. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith.
93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. Arson likely caused the fire that damaged a section of Los Angeles freeway, leaving it closed indefinitely. California Governor Gavin Newsom says as far as who did it.
We have some preliminary tips as it relates to the prospects of determining precisely whom this individual or individuals may be.
Gaza's largest hospital is surrounded by Israeli military, which claims Hamas is using it as a base. CBS's Deborah Potter.
Medical staff from Doctors Without Borders won't leave Al-Shifa Hospital before their 600 or so patients have been evacuated, and they want guarantees that there is a safe corridor to do so.
The Supreme Court adopts a code of ethics after criticism over undisclosed trips and gifts from wealthy benefactors to some justices. CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
In ways big and small, the court is telling us, you wanted this, we're giving you something, but it's frankly not much of something.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Leaders with the universities of Wisconsin are urging lawmakers to release $32 million. They released a plan last week to bolster degree programs to prepare graduates for key jobs, but Republicans still want cuts to diversity offices. UW System President Jay Rothman says a deal's a deal.
We're taking the legislature at their word. They said this was focused on workforce development, and I think everyone in the state of Wisconsin can look at this and say, this is good for our state.
That's Rothman on Capital City Sunday on Channel 27 in Madison. A former Milwaukee police officer is acquitted of homicide charges. A Milwaukee jury on Friday found former officer Michael Mattioli not guilty in the 2020 death of Joel Acevedo. Mattioli says he was only trying to control Acevedo with a chokehold after a fight. He says he acted in self-defense. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Weather brought to you by Bug Tussle. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
Bug Tussle, we're out there.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear and mild for this time of year, a low in the mid-30s. A mix of sun and clouds and breezy tomorrow. Gusts at times will peak out above 30 miles an hour, maybe even as high as 40. High-low 60s. More sunshine and near 60 on Wednesday. It's 32 degrees.
Looking for a reliable, fast, and unlimited internet provider? Look no further than Bug Tussle. Whether you're streaming, gaming, working, or learning, Bug Tussle has you covered. Bug Tussle has continued to serve the rural communities of Wisconsin for over 20 years by providing the most reliable, high-speed internet and excellent local customer service. Call 877-227-0924 or visit bugtussle.com to get started. Bug Tussle, we're out there because you're out there.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Tell a friend what's on tap.
There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Back here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, our first stop on the Working Class Heroes Tour. I'm sitting here with Dennis Howard. He's the president of Teamsters Local 773 here in Allentown. Dennis, thanks for sitting down with us.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, as we were coming through Allentown, and I spent a number of years living here myself, got to know the area intimately. I remember the first thing about Allentown was that song by Billy Joel 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's funny because when I introduce myself, I do some training and development for the international, and I always say that. I was like, yeah, I'm from Allentown, but if you've heard the Billy Joel song, it doesn't suck that bad. Because it's just the way everybody, oh, Allentown, how is it? You know, we're sorry to hear how bad it is. I'm like, well.
I always saw that song differently. Always saw it as a, you know, yeah, things have gotten bad, but we're gonna work through it. Up every day, and we're gonna sludge through, and a solid working class kind of ethos.
Yeah, well, you know, and it is funny because I do mention that as well. It's like we're kind of like a post industrial town. You know, obviously our economy is changing, but we still have a lot of manufacturing here. People don't realize that as much as you know the iconic Mack truck is still built here. You know, they left for a little bit. Now they actually came back. They're starting to build electric vehicles now, electric trucks, and you know that there's a lot of good things happening here too.
No, there's a lot of opportunity, but yep. You know, the story is in you know, this is where we're going to start talking to people about, you know, 2016. I think one of the things that Trump hit on accurately is that people look to the past and that pride of the past of being the global producer. I mean, not too far from here in Trenton, New Jersey, you got a bridge that says Trenton makes the world takes. Mm-hmm. We used to be that producer of the world, and those jobs, those union jobs that people used to have, that was a sense of pride that I think he tapped into, and rightly so.
Yeah, you know, I come from that generation. My father was he was a member of the Glass Molders and Pottery Union, but they were kind of steel workers, you know, and you know, just that mentality. He used to joke with me every time he retired and he was showing me his checks, you know, for like 6 months after that. He goes, this is what happens when you go to work every day, because he got paid out all of his sick time. You know, it was a great learning experience for me. He was, you know, unfortunately injured in a really bad industrial accident there, went right back to work. You know, it's a different breed, I think, than what we have today. Myself included.
How so?
I would joke. I would never be able to. If I took a mental health day, I had to avoid him. Like, I didn't want him to know I took a day off from work. You know, so it is kind of funny. But yeah, the work ethic, I think, was, you know, again, not that our people don't work hard today. It was just different. Like they, you know, he identified himself with his work. Even when he was injured, I was like, I can't believe you're going back to that job. And he's like, well, this is what I do. You know?
Do you think that has a lot to do with the fact that the sense now is corporate America has walked away from working people? And one of the things that I've had people tell me is that, you know, you workers believed that they were part of the company that they built, and that there was that connection. Whereas over the last 40 years of watching, you know, people have their pensions stolen, watching, you know, companies, you know, leave communities like thieves in the middle of the night, that just left people abandoned. That compact is broken. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Yeah, and you know, it's you know, they see people leave jobs because of management, right? And I think that part of that is that corporate America. You know, they just look at people as they're indispensable. You know, we are dispensable. I mean, and so they'll leave one job for another job, and it's just, you know, the same kind of mentality, you know, that we have right now. Like, people just move from job to job. They don't see the long term future. You know, I was in a conversation with a friend of mine from high school, and you know, we get into the little union, non-union, you know, banter back and forth. And I said, let me ask you, do you pay for your health care? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, I'm 54 years old, and I have never taken a dime out of my paycheck to pay for my health care. And I have no deductible plan, $10 office visits, everything's covered. And so, complain all you want. I said, but I've stuck with this. Like, you know, again, I was fortunate enough to work for a company that's very profitable, still very profitable. But we wouldn't have gotten any of that stuff if it wasn't for the Teamsters.
Yep.
Right? UPS was not going to give us those great benefits. They're not going to give us these great pensions willingly. We had to collectively bargain for them. We had people that had to stick together and get those things. I said, wouldn't you like that? I mean, imagine your entire life never having to pay for your health care. It can be done. UPS is still a profitable company. FedEx could do it. Amazon could do it if they wanted to. The reason they don't is because they're not union.
And isn't that's kind of the story that I'm hoping we uncover as we continue this tour, because people pine for those manufacturing jobs. And I've had these conversations over the years, numerous times, of people pining for, you know, that job. And I'm going, was it the job or is it the union job? Is it the, you know, the health care, the retirement security, the reasonable wage, the time off that you get with your family? Is it that, or is it you really pined for the work? And when it comes down to it, it's that family security. It's that that ability to support yourself.
Oh yeah, I mean, even like my dad's one job, his one union job supported myself. I have an older brother and my mom. My mom never worked. She stayed home and raised us. Like, that's almost an unheard of thing today. And again, I think it goes because, you know, most of the jobs, that people don't stay in the jobs long enough to gather those benefits. I think, you know, one of the downsides of that is that we don't have people that are willing to stick it out and organize and make their workplace better, right? They'd rather just jump to another job when there are solutions that they can do. They can organize and, you know, bargain a contract that'll make their lives better, get better health care, better wages, better benefits, better working conditions. You know, we've got, that's part of our job. That's part of our job in communicating that message, that you don't need to keep jumping from job to job to job. We can actually help you make your job better now.
Absolutely. So. And it's the argument that I've been making. If we had, you know, higher union density, if it was easier for workers to join and form unions, we wouldn't see the great resignation. We'd be seeing the great strike waves. And we're seeing a lot of strikes, but we'd be seeing even more.
Yeah.
That these people leaving jobs, I argue these are people actually striking.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, walking away from a job is withholding your labor from that job. I mean, you see it now, and you know, I'm encouraged, you know, because I am, you know, getting older, and you know, I'm looking for, you know, younger people to kind of take on this mantle. And when you start seeing, you know, we got, you know, one Amazon warehouse, you have the Starbucks organizing. We just, you know, the Teamsters just organized a Chipotle restaurant in Michigan. You know, the thing that we need to do is we need to back those workers. You know, I try to like think back to like the early 1920s, and we had a bunch of strikes going on in rail and steel, and we lost those strikes, and it set us back organizing for decades, like probably like two decades. And I think if we don't support these younger workers now and show them that this is the way, this is a better way to a life. I mean, you know, people, they downplay it because they look at, you know, again, they're looking down their nose at a Starbucks worker. All work is important.
Yep.
Regardless of what job it is. And, you know, these workers here feel as though they need to have, you know, a better voice in the workplace. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, every job can be a good job. I mean, yeah, those factory jobs that people are pining for, yeah, were really crummy jobs until they were, yeah, they were union jobs.
Unions, yeah. It made it a little bit safer.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Dennis Hauer, president of Teamsters Local 773 here in Allentown, talking about the great city here of Allentown. If you want to follow along with the tour, make sure you follow our website, thericksmithshow.com. See where we're going, where we've been. You can also send me an email, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Share a thought, question, comment. So, you know, back to the idea here, Allentown, you go back to that song where, you know, that era of deindustrialization, those jobs that left, replaced by service sector jobs, there was a lot of tension and a lot of struggle. And I argue that government didn't do enough to help people. And this is the central moment of where we are. The anger that people feel, I think, comes out of, I don't think government did enough during that 80s, 90s era to help the transition, which I fear the technological change coming forward, we're going to make same kinds of mistakes. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the technological changes that we're seeing now are more in automation. You know, a lot of the warehouses that we have are turning towards automation. And, you know, now we have, you know, self-driving trucks and all these things, that we, again, which is going to eliminate a good union trucking job. You know,
my job,
your job, the job you did, the job I did. So yeah, we have, you know, the automated truck doesn't need health care. It doesn't need pension. It doesn't take days off, you know, and I think that's the goal, is to, again, eliminate, you know, the labor costs for, you know, again, the wealthy people. We need to do something to have some sort of safeguards in there, and the government does need to step in and do a little bit, I think, a little bit better job to handle the potential loss of jobs here.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, how do we handle the transition going forward, learning the lessons that we did before? I mean, you look at all the jobs that were lost in the 80s and 90s through, you know, bad trade policy, through technological changes, through, you know, just horrible policy, corporate greed, whatever that story is. And we did very little to help the workers transition. I mean, a little bit of trade adjustment assistance in some of our bad trade deals, but that was nothing to help support a family or even make the transition possible for most workers. Are there things that you would like to see going forward?
Yeah, I mean, again, it starts with, you know, getting good legislation and having some protections in these bills. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we realize the future's coming. We're not opposed to any kind of technological change as long as our members are protected.
Right.
You know, so that, to me, that's the biggest thing is getting those getting some protections built into these this legislation around automation and around automated trucks.
But also having a floor under people's feet.
Absolutely.
And the ability for the next jobs that come online to be family sustaining jobs. Yeah. Doesn't seem too difficult, does it?
It doesn't, but for some reason it is. It's like, I just don't understand it, because all the politicians, they all talk, everybody talks a good game. But we have somebody here just, running in the Lehigh Valley that she's literally, her company's literally shipping jobs to China. This communist China that we always talk about. She's building a new warehouse there, and she's running for Congress. Now, this person's going to have probably a seat at the table to, have some say in that legislation, and she's doing the exact thing that we're railing against, And it's a close race, which to me is still stunning.
How is that possible?
I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I saw an ad last night where, she had one of her workers. She's not shipping any jobs to China. I'm like, we can see this stuff, right? There's, tax filings for her company. It really is. I don't know if it's just the dumbing down of our society, or they just try to, say whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
But we definitely need to get some, people in here that understand what work is and what, the value of people actually going to work every day and using their hands and making stuff here in America. For whatever reason, we just lost sight of that.
I don't think we lost sight of it.
I think society.
I think the people who sit in our corporate boardrooms and the penthouses that look down on the rest of us saw more opportunity to line their pockets and make themselves wealthier at the expense of working people, which has been the story since the beginning of time.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So then the question becomes, how do we in this moment, because we're more and more defined by which hat we're wearing, whether we're wearing a red hat or a blue hat, how do we unite people? And I've been saying for a while, on election night 2020, I was leading a strike of 55 warehouse workers, three quarters of whom voted for Trump that afternoon, in fighting what I thought was the righteous fight. Fighting against corporate greed, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, all of the things that labor stands for. And I think the only way forward in this moment is in the labor realm, in bringing workers together and fighting on those frames.
Yeah, I think there is this disconnect, right? And especially within even in our membership, that they sometimes I just don't think that they understand all of the work that we do, and that's on us. That's on us to explain better to our membership, like why it's important to, when we say, hey, this person's great for working families, then you should support that person. Because we don't just go out and throw out, endorsements because someone's a Democrat, right? Teamsters Union has a long history of supporting Republicans. For us, it's a matter of getting whether they're Democrat or Republican, for those politicians to understand what it is that we do, how valuable our work is, and that when they do go to Congress or Harrisburg, that they actually do something and vote to help our members, not, whoever their corporate master is. Yeah. We'll never compete money-wise in politics. It's just not going to happen. But what we can compete in is the boots on the ground, the people that are actually voting. That's the hard part. The hard part is, we've gotten to the point where, I know he's passed now, but the guy who used to own the casino here, on the sacred ground of Bethlehem Steel, wrote $100 million check to a presidential candidate. $100 million.
Wow.
One person. How do you compete against that? And if that's what is going to get the attention of politicians, then to us, it's just going to have to be changing our messaging so people understand how important it is to get people in those positions in Harrisburg and in Washington to listen to us.
See, as you say that, I'm thinking back to my grandfather's generation. And, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it.
Yeah.
Because he understands return on investment.
Right.
And if someone's going to take $100 million out of their pocket to
right.
fund a politician, he's getting something back.
Right. And again, the last tax bill that was passed under Trump, Where did that money go?
Yeah.
It didn't go to you or me.
No. There was his return on investment.
Exactly. He definitely took care of it because, you know, again, like you said, it's like no one's going to take that much money out of their pocket if they're not going to get something in return, you know.
So last line of questioning I got for you because, you know, while we're here in Allentown, you know, everyone's heard the song.
Yeah.
You know, what's the story if you rewrite that song 40 years later?
Well, I think it's, you know, you touched on it earlier, our resiliency, you know, we've bounced back, our economy's changed just like a number of other post-industrial towns. You know, we do still have, manufacturing Mack trucks. I mean, we built this building about 6 years ago, all union labor. The trusses are out of a Teamster local in Reading, the concrete's Teamsters, the doors that you see here, these are all Unified. It's a company that we represent. So we do have a lot of manufacturing here. I just think that the national dialogue, when they look at national, you know, obviously our manufacturing has been down, over the last couple of decades, but we still do make stuff here. We still are a powerhouse when it comes to manufacturing. And the fact that we're getting jobs back now, I mean, we're over 680,000 so far since President Biden's been in office. You know, the other guy talked about it, didn't do anything. Sorry.
There you go. That was good. Good catch.
Didn't do anything about it. Like to talk about it. You know, this guy doesn't talk about it much, but he's actually doing the job. You know?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly what I've been saying. And this for me is a pivotal moment. So for people that it's the policy that I think is important. Mm-hmm. Moving towards reshoring manufacturing, actually going to start rebuilding our manufacturing. And every time he talks about rebuilding unions. And as I say, that's the three-legged stool of the great American 60s that my grandparents built, generation built. High taxes on the wealthy. We funded education, healthcare, infrastructure. We paid for our wars.
Yeah.
And
union membership was at over 30%.
And we encouraged strong unions.
Yeah.
And that's the recipe.
Yeah.
Because if we had the billions of dollars that has been hoarded at the top that filtered down to the working class, we'd be a different economy and a different country.
Yeah, no doubt.
But Dennis, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thank you for inviting us into your hall.
No worries.
Always good to see you, buddy.
Yep, you got it.
I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me what you think. I'll make sure you check out the website. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We'll be returning live and in studio on January 3rd.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1918. That was the evening that a series of explosions began at the T.A. Gillespie Company near Morgan, New Jersey. The explosions would destroy the plant and 300 buildings and kill an estimated 100 people. The world was embroiled in World War I. The United States had entered the global conflict the year before. The nation's factories were churning out munitions and other supplies for the war effort. On that fateful evening at Gillespie, workers were loading shells at the sprawling complex of 700 buildings that covered more than 2,000 acres. The initial explosion was likely an accident. Regardless, the explosion was so severe that it cut water lines to that part of the plant. Without water pressure, firefighters struggled to douse the flames. A chain reaction of explosions touched off as the fire spread in the plant. Houses in the nearby town shook from the massive explosions. Windows exploded and residents fled. Residents from three towns were evacuated due to the disaster. The New York Sun described the exodus as, quote, streams of human misery, mothers and fathers, frightened children clutching still more frightened dogs, old people tottering along with all the same dazed expressions on their faces, as if they scarcely realized what had happened. When the fire was finally put out, nearly half of the plant's buildings were destroyed. It was impossible to say exactly how many workers were killed, so bad was the carnage. Two members of the U.S. Coast Guard died responding to the disaster. The disaster was then compounded when a flu epidemic swept through the residents evacuated from nearby towns. The death toll and misery from these tragic events mounted even higher.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show here in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I got to tell you, I love being back in the Lehigh Valley. So many memories here. So many memories of the great Allentown Fair, the old Hess Building downtown, the Lehigh Valley Mall, the memories of building our family here, and I love being here, and the people that we've met here during this time, brought all that stuff back, and I couldn't help but go back and reminisce with some folks, especially my union brothers and sisters who, I've known for so many years and who have been, such big supporters of the work that we do, because ultimately, when you stop and you think about the journey of working people in this country, the fact that, we're all in this in the same direction. We all are looking for, I think, kind of the same stuff. We want to have, good, solid jobs that we can support our families on. With family sustaining wages and health benefits that if someone gets sick, we can take care of them. And look, the Lehigh Valley has one of the best hospital systems in the state. It's been one of the jewels that's really grown and exploded in employment. It's amazing to me. The campus that they've got is just mind-blowingly incredible. But they went from that industrial base, that heavy industrial base, to heavy tech, and education and healthcare. That was the transition that they made, the decisions that they made, the policy choices that they made, and it's paying off. And for those who also know the Lehigh Valley area, you can't not go to Dorney Park, the amusement park that's here, that's been one of the iconic amusement parks in the area. This is just one of those all-American kind of cities that has a little bit of everything. And, like I said, we enjoyed our time here so much. I hated leaving, to be honest. There's still great memories. But it comes back down to the people that we've met and the stories that I think we all kind of share the same background. And, as we've been talking to people, that pathway that, grandparents came back from World War II. They built a life. And that life, was made better by getting good union jobs, and those union jobs supported kids that went off to college, and those kids got, good education, good opportunities, and they expanded their horizons, and they made, lives for themselves, and then their children, tried to send them off to college. But hey, guess what? Things changed. Policymakers changed. Corporate America changed, and the downtrend here is much like a lot of places. I think we're going to find this in city after city that we go to, or at least that's my view at this moment. Maybe I'm going to be proven wrong. Maybe people are going to share some thoughts and educate me a little bit on these different areas. But policy, it comes back down to the policies pursued and what's come out of that. We went on this tax cut fetish, and we've been on it for far too long. So what do you end up with? You end up with people who, they're looking to hoard. More for me. And corporate America making those decisions on how to maximize shareholder wealth over everything else. Whereas before, it was being part of being part of that community, part of that social compact that made places like Allentown great. And it can be again. This is where my mind goes. We can make those policy choices like they've done here, and we can make more of them. We can invest heavily more in infrastructure. We can, because look, by no means is this area perfect. There are problems. There are still places that need investment forward, opportunity. And I think government can and should do that. But it's one of those things that we have to demand of them. We have to expect it from them. We have to make them do it.
Kind of like the old FDR thing. If you want me to do something, make me do it. This is that. Got to make them do it. Comes down to who we vote for. Comes down to who we put in the halls of power. That's the reality. We need working class people in the halls of power. People like you. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show. Like,
you're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.